Mistaken Identity is headed to the Dominican Republic on the new Carnival Celebration in January of 2023, thanks to MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel. Whether you're looking to book a cruise, visit Walt Disney World, or spend some time on a private resort in a remote location around the world, MEI Travel is for you. Frank and Jordan are scheduled to set sail on January 3rd for 7 nights on Carnival's newest ship, set to debut this November. And if that sounds like the type of thing you're interested in, MEI Travel has plenty of accommodations to fit all your travel desires. Contact Brock Taylor for all of your travel needs and to determine the best deals for you at mistakenidentitymedia@gmail.com.
So many people, you know, lifelong Cubs fans, it's our happy place. It doesn't feel like a year without going to Wrigley Field, and you guys are amazing at what you do.
And that's the thing, is that the Wrigley employees are always so helpful. They go beyond.
When you see the same faces year after year after year in the same sections, it makes you feel, it all feels like family. That you're going to a place like it's a little family reunion.
Every family member and friend who comes to that I take to a Cubs game or I take on a Wrigley Field tour, because there's nothing better to do than to be in Chicago, and you all made that possible.
Like I said, these are not just employees, in my opinion. They're like family.
I've brought people from all over the world, all over the country, people that don't like baseball, they love Wrigley Field. And we have you guys to thank for that.
Welcome to Mistaken Identity Beyond the Ballpark, now part of the Unconfined Network. We explore the fascinating personal lives of the people inside Chicago's most iconic sports venue, Wrigley Field. Our podcast will take you on an amazing journey, introducing you to some incredible people that we've met along the way. We'll discuss hot topics, play a few games, and just try to have an overall good time. There'll be plenty of surprises along the way, so stick with us to see where our journey heads next. But for now, kick back, relax, and enjoy the latest episode of Mistaken Identity Beyond the Ballpark.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Mistaken Identity Beyond the Ballpark. So you all have requested that somebody actually interview me, because for 2 seasons I've been interviewing everybody else. So who better to interview me than the person who was on the very first episode, and obviously one of my favorite people in the world, and that is Keyston. Keyston, what's up?
How we doing, Frank? Hey, I'll tell you, it's good to be back. I don't think I've been on any episodes since the episode we did together with Cindy. So, I mean, I was still in the pandemic virtual days. So definitely good to be back and be a part of another podcast, and definitely excited about interviewing the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Frank Walker.
And just for the record, we didn't discuss any of these questions, did we?
Oh, no, absolutely not. Me and Frank, we have a really good relationship, and I'm one of those type of interviewers that like to kind of catch people off guard and ask them some really genuine questions to kind of definitely put them in the hot seat, but get the most honest and genuine answer out of them. So absolutely not.
All right. So I'm going to trade seats, and I'm going to be the guest and let you be the host. So go ahead, knock yourself out.
All right, Frank. So me and Frank originally, just a backstory, met, you know, at Wrigley Field back in the bleachers around 2015. For some reason, we grew a likeness for each other, and our relationship has grown over the past 6 or 7 years. We know a lot about each other. We share different ideas, different passions and things like that. One of the things that really intrigued me about Frank, when I first started really getting to know him, is his backstory, where he grew up, where he's from, and everything like that. So I figured I'd allow Frank to share his backstory with everybody out there in podcast land. Frank, start out by telling us a little bit about your background, where you grew up, the neighborhood, the different schools you went to, and ultimately, you know, one of the reasons you are who you are today.
Before I begin, let me just say, since you're my friend, it is wrong to wear the exact same hat that I've been asking you to get me for a while now in this episode. I can see that hat, and that's going to bother me all day, just to let you know.
And in response, my response to Frank, he loves my Tottenham Hotspur hat. It's a hat that I got from him at a soccer game that I went to, and I told Frank, he can have one of these hats. He hops on a plane, take the 8-hour flight with me over to London and get one for himself at the actual stadium during the game. That will not change, Frank. You gotta come across that pond and get one of these hats.
So I grew up on the West Side in the Austin neighborhood. Matter of fact, my grandmother on my dad's side, the house is still there, actually, a couple blocks from Austin High School. So I'm a West Side person, even though I rarely go to the West Side now. I'm always on the North Side busy, but went to a Montessori school. My mom was a Montessori teacher. So I didn't go to a traditional, I didn't start out in a traditional school. I went to a Montessori school, which is not about books and numbers. It's more about hands-on learning how to do things. Sparks a kid's imagination. And for example, taking a spoon and taking out all the red marbles and putting them in one jar. So I went to school that way, which allowed me to skip kindergarten, actually, because I went to a Montessori school. And then from there, I went to a private school for 8 years, also on the West Side, the same school the MBA's Isaiah Thomas went to, had the same teacher that he had in fifth grade, Mrs. Hall. All of their sorrows, the building is still there. I think Jackson by Marshall High School, the building is still there, but the church is still there. The school is not there anymore. All of their sorrows. I was voted then as the school or class president. So I was in charge of hosting events and throwing surprises. Hint, hint to what I'm doing pretty much now, but I had won that race. I had Benny the Bull there, had all kind of crazy things that people wouldn't expect to happen at school. I was in charge of planning all that stuff. All my events were sold out. People were coming to those events. This was in grammar school. So that's what I really got my start with. Events and being a leader, I guess you would say. At the same time, I was at an after-school program. It was called Murlatt House. Right now, it's never placed. It's a battered women's shelter right down the street from that school. But at 14, they had a job program. It's called Service Workers. And I was able to work with kids for the first time. And that's where the mentoring piece came in, I guess. Because in grammar school, I was mentoring the first graders and the second graders. It's funny how now I'm saying all this, I can see how it played out now in my life. Yep. Back when I was super young, from there I went to Lane Tech, which I'm sure you're going to bring up at some point. I went to Lane Tech High School. The greatest moments and times of my life were at Lane Tech, way better than any other moment, any 4 years I can ever think of. I was a part of many, many programs there. One of them was Future Teachers of America. I thought I was going to be a teacher at some point, teaching young people how to do different things. And then from there, college, Chicago State / UIC, wanted to make it easy and go to school for English and ended up going to do sociology instead. And backtrack real quick, for those that work for the Cubs, I got hired from Lane Tech High School because the Cubs every year would have a booth in the lunchroom at Lane Tech. The one day I decided to eat indoors and not go out to eat, the Cubs were there in the locker room, in the lunchroom, looking for people to work. Now, I did not know the Cubs, didn't watch baseball, or from the West Side, basketball, the Bulls, won championships. So the person that was there, I forgot who that was. Might have been Julius, but he was like, you know, why don't I just try it for one summer? I'm like, I guess I could do one summer at Wrigley Field. And this was in 1994, I believe. Yeah, 94. I'm like, I'll do Wrigley for 1 year. I won't go back. I'll just make some money and get out of the way. And I will, you know, go from there. So obviously that 1 year turned into forever. Yeah. And, you know, that's how I began. That's the beginning.
Good. So, I mean, and one of the things that me and Frank learned about each other, and Frank just recently learned about me not too long ago, is that I actually grew up in the Austin neighborhood as well. And actually, my auntie used to stay not too far from where Frank grew up at. And of course, he brings up Lane Tech because I think some people learned that Frank went to Lane Tech on our ride back from the Club 400 bus. And we were riding past Lane Tech, and I'm like, yeah, everybody, Frank went to Lane Tech. And they're all like, you went to Lane Tech? Oh, my gosh. And you know, I was always envious of a campus like Lane Tech because I went to Gage Park High School on the south side. And you heard him mention the one time that the Cubs were there in the lunchroom. He didn't have the ability to go off campus for lunch on the south side where I went to high school. That was not an option. It was mandatory that you stayed on campus for lunch. But I can remember taking the bus, I don't know where, somewhere up north, and you got all of these Lane Tech students sitting out on the grass reading books and everything like that. And I'm like, wow, what a luxury to have over here. But I'm just going to piggyback a little bit. Just talk about what it was like growing up in the Austin neighborhood. You know, I remember living in Austin, and, you know, we ultimately moved to the south side when I was around 6 years old. But talk a little bit about your time in Austin and what that experience was like living in that neighborhood with the reputation it has of being one of those neighborhoods that are plagued with crime, poverty, and, you know, low education, low resources.
So for me, I think, you know, it was weird compared to what I hear now, because back when I was a kid, all the neighbors knew me and they knew the family. I know the rules, be in the house by the time the lights come back on, or be at least where I can see you on the porch where the lights come on. You know, you play with your friend. There were no cell phones. We weren't like on cell phones. We had friends and we had, you know, bikes and things. So the violence that I see now, I didn't really see too much of it back then. You know, if somebody messed with you on your block, your neighbors were going to take care of them for you. I do remember, actually, the first time I got hired with the Cubs, I wore the Cubs uniform home one day when I lived on Mark Benson. Because the Cubs back then, and somewhat now to some people, were considered to be a white organization or a white team up north, you got some credibility in your hood because you worked for the man up on the north side. People would leave you alone. Like, right? So, you know, people, I think, you know, back then with in a gang or whatever, they sort of respected people who were trying to do good. You know, you didn't hear about aspiring high school student shot and killed like you do now, because back then, the people, even if they were in gangs, had bad intentions, they wanted the people on the block to come up and they would protect you at any cost. So I wore that Cubs uniform a little bit more, you know, for that reason. But I gotta say, to me, it just was not as bad as you hear about now. Everybody in the neighborhood knew you. Like, you know, I was afraid for the neighborhood next door to tell my grandmother how I was at school or what was going on, or that I was afraid that they would get me too. So a little bit different, I would say, but just not as, I don't know, I think it's, you hear about more things now. I'm not sure if it's a lack of, I don't know, but back then it was just not as bad.
That's good. I definitely agree with you. I remember good times in the Austin neighborhood. Very family, neighbor oriented. I think the family structure was really there. And, you know, in those neighborhoods and those surroundings, sometimes we didn't have much monetarily or material wise, but, you know, we always had those values, hard work, discipline, accountability, dedication. So I think that a lot of those things definitely stuck true to me and you to this day. Just listening to you talk about your past and school, and it seems like you really have this niche that you developed from a young age with just dealing and mentoring and guiding people, whether it's the youth or young adults. And it seems like it's a passion of yours. Just talk a little bit about how that's really brought the best out of Frank, really working and dealing and guiding people towards success, and how some of your own personal experiences help you be successful in that area.
Yeah, you know, I get this question all the time. You know, Frank, how do you do it? And I was invited to the White House twice during the Obama administration. I had won some awards for some best practices for some youth programs that I was doing for Youth of Color Chicago. Matter of fact, I was I won the Black Male Achievement Award from Mayor Emanuel here in Chicago. So people always ask the same question, like, Frank, how do you do it? What's the secret? And I got to tell you, I really think that, and it's going to sound cliche, but I feel like it's a gift. I don't really plan things out. I sort of just say, I want to do this. I don't really, if somebody's not doing it, I'm not the one that just sort of sits back and like, I wish somebody would do whatever. I just sort of go ahead and do it. Like, I don't care if it fails, if it doesn't fail. And I've had some losses, obviously. But those losses made me make the win so much better because I learned from those losses. I just feel like it's a gift. I was the leader of my church's youth program. I was at two different churches. Both churches that I went to, I ran the youth programs there. Very successful. To this day, all the youth in those programs still talk to me to this day. Matter of fact, I worked at homeless youth shelters on the south side of Casa Norte. Some of those people still talk to me to this day. At Wrigley Field, you're not supposed to have this, but I do some mentoring there. People that have left Wrigley Field don't work there anymore. I got a message yesterday. They need a reference from me. A personal reference from somebody who works for the Bulls now, who worked for the Cubs, and remembered me and how I took care of them and got them a belt or whatever when they needed it. So it just comes natural for me. And for whatever reason, people see that it's genuine, and then it just works.
And, you know, I can definitely agree with you on that one, Frank. I mean, in my line of work, dealing with youth, mentoring them, even younger or older adults, you said something that I definitely connect with. It comes natural. And I think when you start looking for things to do in your life, you know, they have to be meaningful, and they don't come off as this job or this obligation you have. You're just naturally able to do them. And, you know, you really feel good about it. Do you think that, you know, your college education, going to college, do you think that kind of helped you as well? Digging deeper into like the theories and the whys as you got older and you're dealing with different type of situations, do you feel like your college education helped you in your day-to-day duties as a mentor, as a supervisor at the Cubs today?
So I didn't then, but as I've gotten older, I sort of see it playing out now, especially when it comes to Jordan, right? So, you know, when Jordan's grandmother died unexpectedly, brain aneurysm, I moved from godfather to father, right? So now I got somebody that I am, this is my son, basically. Now he's just my godson, because, you know, he has somebody that he can go to and get things done from. That person is gone now. So now I am the one. I think it helps me hear more, because there is no, and just full transparency, me and my father are not close, right? My mom and dad got a divorce, I think I was 16 or 15, and the divorce started the beginning of the non-communication, right? Like, so every once in a while, I'll get a text and, you know, whatever, I'll text him back for my birthday. But once my mom and dad got a divorce, he was just gone. So nothing prepared me for a Jordan, other than that schooling, that sociology. So that's why I say back then, I'm like, this is pointless. But now that I'm older, it's starting to make sense now.
So you're definitely seeing a return on your college education. That's exactly what I want to hear. You know, I do career and college counseling. So, you know, return on investment is critical. You see a lot of people that go into different fields, you know, they get these degrees and they don't really apply them. So it's definitely good to know that you're still able to apply those things. Just going back, you know, and I come from a similar situation with you when my dad wasn't there. And, you know, the statistics show, you know, a child with father absence is less likely to succeed in the classrooms. You know, they're like less likely to have positive relationships with other people. And sometimes they think that these individuals, primarily African-American males, you know, are faced towards either, you know, a life of crime and drug sales and things like that. What do you think your mindset was when your dad left, and how did you overcome that? and really stay on a positive path to where you're at today?
So I was so happy when I got divorced. I was extremely happy when I got divorced. And I'm going to explain why. So my dad learned from his dad, who learned from his dad from the South, that women were their property and they can lay their hands on them whenever they choose to. There were many, many nights that me and my brother, my dad would come home and be drunk. They went to fighting. They went to the police. My brother and I shared rooms together. So we knew at a certain point during the night, with the pillows over your ears, you don't have to hear whatever going on. And that went on for years. Again, my dad learned from my grandfather, who did it to my grandmother, who learned that from his father, my great grandfather, who all put their hands on their wives. That's the manly thing to do in the South and here now, I guess. So when they got, I never forget the day that she finally had enough and she stabbed him in the house. And I woke up in the morning and there was a blood, it's going to sound bad, but there was a blood trail. The bus that came, I'll get on the school bus to go to school, and the bus had came and there was a trail of blood outside from the door to the sidewalk. And I knew that what that was from last night because I had heard it, and I heard, you know, heard the police there and whatever. And I was so happy that one, she fought back, but two, that it was over. Like, you know, I was going to kind of have these, you know, nights where I'm up hearing the fighting and what have you. And it also began the mission to make sure that any young man that I come in contact with will never, ever, ever hit a woman again. I'm going to be a mentor and prevent any other man who ever gets involved with a woman. If they've come through the Frank Walker system, they will not do the mistakes of what I learned from my father, my grandfather, great-grandfather, which is how the mentoring piece came. It was a mission, really, to make sure that no other man that I come in contact with ever lays a hand on a female ever again in life.
Yeah. You know, sometimes it's that culture of honor, what I like to call it, or that generational curse where, you know, things are passed down and those are our beliefs. But I feel like you could have went two ways, right? You could have went the way of your dad, but you went the other way, which recognized that this isn't acceptable. This isn't the route that I want to take. And this isn't definitely something that I would promote or advise anybody else to do. So, I mean, you know, me growing up, you know, I come from a history of drug addicts where, you know, my dad was a drug addict and luckily he's been clean 13 years now. And keep in mind, he was a drug addict since the time I was, 5 years old. So it's a real reason I don't do drugs. I don't care. Well, it's just weed. It doesn't matter. Like, I've seen how that can tear a family apart. So I think those type of things, we can definitely be the victim or the victor. So kudos to you for being a victor. And I'm just amazed at how much you've learned and how much you apply things that you've seen from your childhood and they still impact you in such a positive light today. I'm going to change the subject. We're going to change notes. I just want to get a little bit of background, let everybody get a little bit of background of Frank that they know from Wrigley Field, the Cubs. So just tell us how long you've been with the Cubs, you know, the first role you took on, your current role, and the tenure you've had in each of these roles throughout your career working for the Cubs.
Yes. So I started in 94. I was an usher. The first experience I ever had with racism or being called the N-word was at Wrigley Field. Matter of fact, I would say 90% of my experiences with racism up until now have been at Wrigley Field. So, I've spent my life there, obviously, on the North Side. So, first time I called the N-word was at Wrigley Field. I was stunned. I just couldn't believe it. I never had that before. I was passing out promo, right away. It was for kids. And this one parent, this is still going on today, this one parent who I know, the child got the promo. The parent went by and made a kid come back and lie to me about not getting the promo. I'm like, oh, no, hey, I just gave you the promo. And the kid acknowledged that I gave him the promo. So I'm thinking it's over. The parent comes back after the promo. I'm like, well, no, I just gave him the promo. And I asked the kid, like, hey, did I give you the promo? And the kid doesn't say anything. And the mom is there. And so he walks off but calls me the N-word. And I'm just stunned. I couldn't move. I couldn't whatever. I couldn't talk. I couldn't whatever. But anyway, so that was my first year in 94. I was an usher for about 2 years. I did the scoreboard for 2 years, the electronic scoreboards that are under the terrace. I did those. So I would go to the gate. I would take tickets. And then before the game starts, I would run up to the press box, sit in the press box. And this is why people call me spoiled. But I would sit in the press box. I would have lunch or dinner with all the media in my uniform. Back then, we had ties, a vest, and blue pants. I would leave the gates, go up to the press box, have lunch if it's a day game, have dinner if it's a night game with all the media that were there. Even some of the bosses, the managers that were there, I would have dinner and things in there. And then I would go up to the very top of the press box next to Rick, who runs the green scoreboard, who's still there today. And I would sit next to him, and it was my job to do the ball, the strikes, and the batter for 2 seasons. I did that. I was also a runner. I did a lot of that. I was a runner for the media relations team. I was the one that would go, when I was done taking tickets, I would go to the media relations office, which at that point was inside of Wrigley Field, where the gift shop is now above Gate 3. That was the media relations department. I went upstairs. Wanda Taylor, who worked for the city now. She was a black lady, by the way. She was upstairs in that office. I would go up there. She would give me the game notes for the visiting team, the home team, whatever other notes that were going on upstairs. I would run up to the press box. So I was the runner for, I think, a year or so. And back then, we had gate chiefs and gate assistants. So the gate chief was a security person. And the gate assistant was a GSA. So I was a gate assistant for a while. And then I wanted to be a gate chief, but there were no men that were gate chiefs back then. There were only females that were gate chiefs. But I liked being at the gate because, and this is going to sound bad, but when the gates were closed, we just hang around and chill at the gates. I don't want to go inside the stadium and work. So I wanted to stay at the gate. So I'm like, I want to be a gate chief. So I was a gate chief, one of the only males at that time. I was at gate D, which is now gate one, every day for 5 years straight, the same gate. And I loved it. I loved it. Same gate every day for 5 years. And then I got the opportunity, me and Antonio Brown, another Cubs crowd management. Back then, they were called crowd control. We didn't call them security or SSA. We called them crowd control. We got the chance to go down to Florida and work for a minor league stadium that the Cubs were going to move into, but they didn't move into it because of kind of hurricane or whatever. But we were flown down there to that minor league stadium, and we got our housing, we got paid, we stayed on campus. We basically ran the operations and ran the stadium. I went to college and so forth and did some other things. And I came back to the Cubs 2016, and they won the World Series. I think it's my fault, but they won the World Series. Came back and got right back to where I left off at as a gate chief. I was the first ever gate chief at Gate H, which is now considered the Gallagher Way gate, when it was brand new, was the first one there. There was no gates previous to that with that Gallagher Way, so we have to make it up as we go. So I helped to design a lot of the things that we have now, how we do the reentry, the scanning in, the scanning out, and all that. Myself, along with supervisors, we actually designed that process. I also won Employee of the Year that year. My peers voted me as an Employee of the Year that year. So I became a supervisor. I applied for supervisor first, the first year. And there was a manager there who interviewed me. She was new, which is, I didn't get it because I didn't have enough experience. At first I was like, wait a minute, I've been here forever. But I took that no, I'm like, you know what, fine. I'm gonna go out and show you what I can do. And my next interview lasted all of 5 minutes. Because they had seen what I can do, and I became a supervisor. Like 5 minute interview, 3 questions. Matter of fact, in the interview, when they interviewed me, they played back my stats, like my accomplishments and what I had done. Frank, you were for the Bears, right? Yeah, Frank, you did this. Yeah, I did that. Like so, and I was done. And I was a supervisor, and that's where I'm at today.
Yeah, I mean, you get a really good reputation out there. Amongst the security staff, GSAs, your fellow supervisors. You know, one of the interesting parts, I think that sometimes, you know, somebody's first impression or their first experience can kind of dictate their entire attitude. And I think about that one experience back when you first started at the gate with the promo. You could have walked away from that situation and said, I never want to come back here and be in this situation and be in this environment again, right? What made you stay?
Ooh, no, I get that question now in 2022, like what, because it has changed so much. And, you know, I don't really recognize it as much because I've been in so long. Like if I was just starting then I would recognize it. But when you've been through the Tribune as an owner, you've been through five different management teams, but obviously it's going to change. And like sometimes I think to myself, maybe it has outgrown me. Maybe it's time for me to go. But I think what keeps me coming back there is the people, right? I couldn't tell you what the Cubs did yesterday. I don't watch the game. When the game doesn't involve me, I don't really watch it. I don't really. The players, they're okay. I mean, I don't go crazy. Jason Hayward, I like because he works with young people. People swear I like Jason Hayward because he's a Cub and on the field. I'm like, no. I like Marcus Stroman. He works with young people. Like, I can relate to that. So I don't really care that much about what the Cubs do or the team, but the people that I met you, I mean, people like Erica and the, you know, and the Erics and the Mike Spiffs and the people that I meet, the Toyas, you know, that's the reason why, you know, I come back and do it. It's the people, it's just the people that are there. It's not the team, it's not the organization. It's the people, you know, that keeps you coming back.
And it's all about people with you, and something I definitely love. So I'm going to throw you a curveball. Growing up, we all had that ideal career that we wanted to pursue. For me, it was a major league baseball player, right? Growing up playing baseball. And then I said, well, if I can't be a major league baseball player, I wanted to be a model for Banana Republic. But now you would probably say I could probably be a model for Lululemon, right?
Lululemon.
What would you say growing up, what was your vision of like your life? What were your career aspirations? If it was one thing that you were like dead red set on doing in your career growing up, what was it?
So I honestly gonna sound crazy, but I thought that I was gonna grow up to be a preacher or a pastor. I really thought I was gonna be that when I was young. Because just like I'm infatuated with baseball stadiums, I'm infatuated with cathedrals and churches. Like I like to see how those stained glass, like I was just in love with those kinds of things. So I thought I was gonna be that for a while. And then I always thought that I would be a teacher because my mom was a teacher. I thought I would be a teacher. I've sort of stayed on that path, you know, mentoring. I have kids around me or young people around me all the time. But I think I thought I was going to be a teacher. I think that's why I probably do so well with trainings at stadiums and ballparks because I'm able to teach people. But I thought I wasn't going to be a preacher. I thought I was going to be a teacher. So that's what it was.
Yeah, I mean, you could still pursue either or. Yeah, you can. I think you can. I mean, you preach in your role today. You still preaching to me about the importance of investing, still preaching to me about how you want my hat and all of these different things, right? But you're also in a leadership role, which teachers have to do. Teachers don't just, you know, teach a curriculum. I think that they're leading and molding young adults and even adults in different areas and paths of their life. So with that being said, lastly, Wrigley Field question. Give me your top three Wrigley Field experiences since you've been working for the Cubs.
Obviously, the World Series. I got to say the World Series was a big thing, even though I didn't watch the final out. But that was huge. I mean, I got to see Amy Schumer and Chance the Rapper and John Travolta. I mean, God, it was just insane where I was at on the terrace during the World Series. Matter of fact, they were all night games, but the streets started being closed at 8 a.m., and there were people out in the streets, like thousands of people waiting for the game, a night game. They were out here at 8 o'clock in the morning. That was amazing to me. I got to say that the day that, you know, Morgan called me to say that I was a supervisor, that was emotional. I couldn't imagine being that 16-year-old kid who said at Lane Tech, I'm with it for one season, who came and, you know, was called the N-word and had all these other things going on. Didn't think we'd ever get to that point. I was really shocked when she said, I just knew when she called me that I was going to be, because they back then, they told whether you were guest service or security. So I just knew she was going to say guest service. I'm like, 150 pounds. I'm like, there's no way Morgan's going to say you are going to be security. And when she said security, I was, oh, okay, maybe she's crazy. But so I think that's my number two. And I think number three for me is, so the same year that I won Employee of the Year for Security, several people that I had mentored, Reese and Tyrell and all of them, they won the same year for the work they did at the gate with me. So not only did I win for the work I did, the people that I was mentoring and bringing up, they did too, and they all thanked me. And then the following year, Rob Kostecki, who actually won, he actually thanked me privately too. He's like, Frank, you are a big reason why I just won Employee of the Year. So there have been five people in the last three seasons of baseball that I worked with closely, that I've mentored, that ended up being either Employee of the Year or Rookie of the Year. So those are big accomplishments for me. The fact that people that I worked with one-on-one give me the credit. Not me giving them, not me saying it's me, but them telling me that I'm the reason why. I think those are the biggest accomplishment for me, to seeing other people win that I'm associated with.
Yeah, I mean, I remember you making that post on Facebook about me and saying, you know, if he wins, I win. If I win, he wins. You know, it's a definitely, that's a leadership quality and trait. But, you know, for you to win Employee of the Year and then you have other people under what I call the Frank Walker tree, and as well, you know, there's a term that I use all the time, attitude reflects leadership. So it goes back to the excellent leadership you've provided and guidance. It's just something you got a knack for, like you said, it could be a God-given gift, but it's a general passion. But so other than that, I guess my next question for you is what are your travel plans for 2022, 2023? Where do you see yourself going?
So, you know, I am going on my first. I'm going on a cruise. I love cruising. But it'll be Jordan's first cruise. So looking forward to that. We're going to the Dominican Republic on a new cruise ship. It's not even built yet, but it should be done by that time. The Carnival Celebration, we're partnering up with MEI Travel, who's putting it all together. You all will hear that ad on this podcast at some point. If you want to go to Disney or travel around the world, check out MEI Travel. But and then Jordan and I will be going to London for the Cubs game, if you don't want to go. But
here's the thing that people have to understand about me. I love English Premier League soccer, right? And me and Frank had this discussion about me going to the Cubs game in London. And I told him, I can't justify going to England to watch a baseball game. Anytime I'm over in England, it's all about the soccer. So at some point, Frank is going to have to put on his travel calendar to go and see a Premier League match at some point, fall of 2023. I know he's scared, or he may not be scared. He just isn't into long flights, but hopefully after he sees that flight for the Cubs game over in, what is it, June, he'll have the confidence to be able to go back over there at some point in October or November next year to see a Premier League game with Keystone.
A lot of my travel has to do with Jordan for next year, and I'm sure we'll probably talk on Jordan at some point, but a lot of my travel has to do with that. I have done so much stuff. People think that because I post a lot about Jordan that I actually spend time with him, but I'm so busy with other people and their stuff that I really don't. He doesn't really get that much time with me at all. So the only way he can get it is in another country where I'm not going to have answering the phone and things like that. But most of my travel will be, with Jordan in 2023, unless I'm hypnotized and I'm convinced to go with you somewhere. But London right now and the DR is on the schedule, at least.
Yeah, I mean, that's good quality time. I was just in Cuba last month. And, you know, one of the differences between Cuba and London, you'll actually have cell phone service in London. In Cuba, you don't have any cell phone service. I think it was the ultimate like checkout trip for me and my friends that I went with. But I mean, unless you want to pay those international roaming fees, I would say keep your phone off and just enjoy your time with Jordan. Last questions. Outside of, you know, the ballpark and Frank being busy, what kind of relaxes you at the end of the day? Are you listening to music or are you listening to podcasts? Are you reading books? Just take us into Frank's mind, what he's doing when he's not at the ballpark, he's not running around planning these different events. What keeps him at peace and help Frank sleep at night?
It's funny because, you know, I have more free time than people think that I do, mainly because I'm a huge fan of multiple streams of passive income that don't require work. So I have I do the podcast, obviously. I record a bunch of shows usually in a week. So that's pretty much done. I do some Airbnb here and there in collaboration with Jordan, by the way. So Jordan handles most of the business side of, I guess you want to call it Frank Walker Enterprises, but Jordan actually handles most of that stuff, the emails and scheduling, and he handles all of that so that I don't even have to. Like, if somebody sends me a hateful email or a hateful review, whatever, I didn't even get to see it. But Jordan handles all that stuff. But usually by 10 a.m. every day, usually, I'm done for the day, usually by 10 a.m. When there's no Cubs game, obviously. I'm a huge fan of wrestling. I love, ever since I was a child, I loved wrestling, Hulk Hogan and all, whatever. So I'm watching that now, obviously. I don't watch TV. I do stream a lot of stuff, watch it when I want to watch it. I do a lot of YouTube learning, which is odd, but you can type up anything on YouTube to learn how to do it, I discovered. So now I'm infatuated with just learning on the YouTube, getting education on stuff that I don't know on YouTube, because, you know, I'm getting older now. And of course, you know, Jordan is younger. So Jordan makes a kind of comment that me in my 40s want to pretend like I know that I don't know. So I'll go and YouTube it and learn about it. So then I can go to him and say, oh yeah. He goes, what you know about this? Like, I know everything, but I really got it from YouTube. And he's going to hear this and laugh probably. I'm spending my free time, I would say, learning new things. I'm always trying to figure out what new things I can do for the staff at Wrigley. I sort of feel like how I was in the 90s. I want to bring sort of that family atmosphere back. It was, you know, work sponsored back then. It isn't now, obviously, we're too big now because, you know, we have more staff. But what can we legally do outside of work that would still resemble showing staff that I appreciate what you do and let's hang out and have a good time. So you've been to my last party, by the way, at Club 400. So, you know, I'm from the Oprah school of partying where you have to go big and everybody gets a bag and you get a limo bus. And I'm from that type of format. And, you know, I don't want people to thank me or I don't want people to, you know, I hate being, you know, don't put me on the spot. It's not about me, it's about them. I'm learning. In my spare time, I am doing some reading here and there, but, you know, and of course, trying to learn this father role thing so that I can give you some tips if I need to one day. But, you know, me and you both are on the same boat where, you know, just we didn't have the father that showed us how to do it. I do read a lot of how to parent adult children, but not. I do want to talk about, everybody knows about Jordan. Let me pick up Jordan now. So Jordan, when he was a child, I think I told you this too, hated me because I was strict. I had rules, right? Because my dad ruled with an iron fist, right? Black folks got whoopings back in the day, right? You know, go get the belt, hold your hand out, whatever. Strict. So I was strict on Jordan, criticized everything. A lot of that stuff now I'm having to make up for, right? Because every small little thing that he does, he expects me to go from 0 to 10 or to criticize it or to critique it because I used to always do it all the time. And so I am learning a lot about raising. I'm reading a lot of books, and you know, I don't know everything. I can admit that. And he'll tell you, because sometimes I read a book. He can tell sometimes. Sometimes I'll try this out on him. He goes, Frank, stop reading those books. He can tell that I've read something in a book that says this is what you should do. And I'll go and do it. And he's like, something he likes, but he can tell. So I'm learning this role that I've had. You know, he's a different, when he was a kid and we argued and fought and he hated me and said he hated me and whatever. And I was like, what do I want to do with this kid? To now where he's like my shadow and loves me to death. And I never thought we'd get to this point. I'm learning about that right now. So those are what I do right now for in my spare time.
Yeah, I mean, parenting isn't easy. You know, I look back and, you know, my mom's no longer with us. My grandfather, who was, you know, the rock and my father figure back in the day, is no longer with us. My grandmother's still here, luckily. But, you know, back then it was a different way of raising children. But when I look at where I'm at today, I'm very grateful, you know, because they did it for good reason. Definitely trying to protect you. And a lot of times parents, they don't have all the answers. They're still trying to learn it as they go, as you just said. But just creating that structure, that support, that love, I think that that was critical. And I think that that's what you're definitely doing right now. But sounds like even though you're not busy, you're still busy. But I guess my next question for you is, when you got free time, when are you going to come to the boxing gym with me and get a workout?
When the Cubs play the White Sox in the World Series, I promise I will do that.
And one thing about Frank always talks about my shirts and everything like that. We had this joke Thursday when I saw him at Rizzo's. And I'm like, in order to get one of these shirts, I'll buy you this shirt, but you got to fit into this shirt. His arms aren't big enough. But Frank, I definitely got to get you to Mayweather Boxing with me for a workout. You know, physical health, mental health, emotional health, all of those things are critical. And you're solid in the majority of those areas. I just want to make sure you get some more physical activity outside of just your day-to-day walking throughout Wrigley Field.
The one reason why we work well together, and a lot of people at Wrigley may not, they don't know how we are outside of work. They don't see us outside of work. But I think one of the reasons we work well together is because just hearing you say that, I'm jokingly saying no, whatever. But I'm probably going to think about that at some point and go around the block or whatever. And that's what, you know, that's what friendships are supposed to be about, right? Like, we joke with each other. We also help each other out. So, you know, and, you know, you always outdo me with the clothes. Like, this is my show, and you're outdoing me now with the hat that I want and whatever. But it's competition, and it's healthy competition, and it works for us. We'll see what happens, you know, in 2 or 3 years if I choose to box or not. I doubt it, but we'll see.
I'll get him there, and we'll probably have to do a video podcast of his experience with me at Mayweather Gym. I mean, I'm there, what, 4 or 5 days a week, depending on any given night or any given week. But I guess you're off the hot seat, Mr. Walker. This was a pleasure. It's always fun catching up with you. You know, we had a really good discussion Thursday night over ribs at Murphy's. Yeah, we had ribs and had a really good discussion. So it's always a pleasure. We haven't really been able to catch up. I'm busy working the Cubs and working my full-time job. Frank's, of course, busy. But we finally agreed and had the opportunity tonight to definitely reconnect. So you're off the hot seat. Like I said, the name of this podcast is Quite Frankly, Frank and Keyston. So I hope everybody enjoy and continue to be blessed with health, peace of mind, and just overall happiness.
All right. Thank you all very much. And we will catch you all in the next episode of Mistaken Identity Beyond the Ballpark.
Hey guys, if you're hearing my voice here again, that means we've reached the end of the show. It's that time again for all the thank yous and special messages and disclaimers, you know, all the stuff you really tune in for each week. A big thank you yet again to all of our supporters who not only continue to tune into our show, but take the time to hit the like button, write reviews, and share our content on social media. It all really helps us grow our audience. Our Patreon page continues to thrive as well, as we're working not only on the podcast, but the Roku channel and the book club and on and on and on. If you'd like to be a part of that expanding Mistaken Identity experience, follow the link in our show notes to our Patreon page, or go to patreon.com and search Mistaken Identity Podcast for all the ways you can sign up to access this multitude of additional content. Mistaken Identity is also now a part of the Unconfined Network, which is a home to many podcasts whose hosts have met inside the walls of Wrigley Field. To check out the network's other show offerings, head to unconfinednetwork.com. That's all one word, unconfinednetwork.com, to view all of our shows and their catalogs. Shouts out to Frank Walker, Jesse Graham, and Jordan Burks for their continued efforts both in front and behind the scenes to keep Mistaken Identity rolling along every week. And of course, we can't leave without our disclaimer. The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are solely our own, and we do not speak for or on behalf of the Chicago Cubs or any other organization. This is Joe Flaherty for the Mistaken Identity Podcast saying stay safe, and we'll catch you next time beyond the ballpark.
Hey, it's Frank from the Mistaken Identity Beyond the Ballpark podcast. Listen, I get so many messages, emails, phone calls about investing because I talk about it so much on this show that I can't respond to them all. But what I've decided to do is do a class on Patreon for all of our supporters in two categories: for those that are 40 and under and those that are 40 and older, because investing is different based on your age. I get asked, Frank, what is an NFT that these young folks are talking about? What is cryptocurrency? Or I hear about, Frank, is it time to readjust my 401k? What's the best life insurance to get? What about life insurance that has living benefits? Or the big one, I just got a raise at my job. It's 2%, but inflation is 7%. Did I really get a loss? I have also noticed a trend. A lot of parents and or grandparents are starting to understand that the cost of college is skyrocketing, and they know that it is better to invest when your child is younger as opposed to later on. And I've recently been talking about how I have gotten some real estate and some stocks and some other investments into Jordan's name so that he is taken care of if something were to ever happen to me. I'll break all of that down, how I did that, how you leave stuff to your children or loved ones in a will, and all that good stuff on these investing sessions. Talking about all that and more on our Patreon page every week. Go and get it, patreon.com/mistakenidentitypodcast. Let's get investing and generational wealth together.